everybody, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, number 150 on March the 7th, 2006. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio, right here on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. We're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind, for a solid hour, folks.
Wow.
Here are the hosts of the show, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Well, Tom, we made it back for to do this show once again, didn't
we? Yes, we did. Everybody's here today, folks.
Yeah, everybody's
Even Don
here.
Don Patterson's up here today.
Yes, sir. Four-car garage and still adding on. I tell you, it's just never-ending.
My name's Tom Houston, but here he is, folks, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, Phil Parr.
Got up out of my sick bed to come and be with you today, friends.
Yeah.
I've had a bad case of SARS or something for the last... Man, it attacked me. I don't know. There's Cummings and Susie left, and I did all right for two or three days, and then I taken them a bed with a death rattle.
Well, the day they... The Sunday they were at my house, I got the sore throat.
Yeah,
and then it went downhill after that.
But, you know, Luann, I don't know what it was, because Luann, she didn't catch it. She didn't... Nothing bothers her. She just keep right on going. But man, you know, can't sleep and you just, you know, can't breathe. And
that's been going around a lot of
can't
folks.
Eat.
Just,
I guess it is. I don't know what it is, but I went to the doctor twice. And
you probably had the country's first unrecorded case of the bird flu.
Of the bird
flu. Yeah, probably.
Man, it was tough. It was a touch and go there for a while. Like we've discussed a thousand times, Houston, when you can't breathe, nothing else makes any difference.
Exactly.
If you can't breathe, nothing else. If everything else is,
yeah, that's
you don't forget about everything else.
You don't think about anything else. If you can't breathe, then you're nothing. You know, your stock portfolio, nothing matters if you can't breathe. And that's the way it was. That's what old folks talk about: is their illness, aches and ills. But we did have Tim Cummings and his wife Cheryl down for a weekend, and also Susie Barnes. And if you missed that show, it was 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
Number 149 or 140. Yeah, it was 149, I guess. Was it 149?
Yeah.
I guess so, yes.
Would have been 149. Good show. Had live bumper music. If you missed it, you ought to go back and listen. One of our better little shows. Dale Campbell talked all about roofing.
Yep, it was a good show.
And it was one of our better efforts. We're glad those folks came. And what is that? Oh, that's a train.
A train.
Y'all come back anytime. Y'all here? You know? What else is going on? Anything exciting? It's hot. Last time I checked, it's 82 degrees.
Yeah, unreal.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, 80? It is.
Well, we really haven't had any bad weather this year. Just very little.
Except the weekend they were all here.
Only bad weekend we've had is the weekend they were here.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it... Listen to Frankie. See, now it's hot. I turned the air conditioner off and it's hot again.
Global warming.
Global warming. I think that's it. But the weekend, they were here. It rained all weekend long. Rained on us kind of going down to get them.
Well, I just thought it was our Texas hospitality. They came from that type of weather, and we just thought we'd
provide them some more while they were here. That's right.
Most of you know Tim and Cheryl live in Boston. Never once went walking back and forth from the studio to the house, because it's just open. I mean, they're two separate buildings. So you're out in the elements. Never once did I hear anyone say, doggone, it's cold.
you won't hear that.
Because it's around 40. Cheryl was optimistic. She wore sandals. She figured, you know, it'll be nice and warm in Texas. And it's down 40. State hovered about 40 all weekend long. But I don't know what the weather gets in Knoxville. Susie never did. She never did.
It gets cold up there, I believe.
She said there's kind of mirrored. You know, my sister at one time lived 100 miles east of her, give or take. And yeah. Marlene used to always tell me, whatever weather we had here in Texas, 3 or 4 days later, they got it. Well, you got the rain front, then it went there. And Susie said maybe they were 5 degrees a little cooler than us. But
let's see. This is my mic. That's my mic. Turn it down a little bit. There, here we go.
Okay.
Now, that's much better. That was too loud. So whatever weather we get, they get it 3 or 4 days later.
Yes,
which is like the same thing as Dallas, right?
Yeah, similar.
Dallas always gets, whether Dallas gets, we get 3 or 4 days later. Anyway, we're all trucking along. Spring has come to the Piney Woods. We'll have one more little cold snap, get down to about 40 degrees, and that'll be it for winter. It's on to 90-degree days.
After you plant your garden.
Right after
you
plant
your garden. And we'll get the little Easter snap.
Little tomatoes trying to come up, stumbling, struggling along.
Bring on the hot weather.
You like it better, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm for that.
Well, boy, if you think electric bills were bad this winter, guys.
Yeah. They were bad.
You wait till this summer. Wait till this summer and you turn that big 220 unit on, you know, cooling your home.
Well, so, I'm fixing to have to increase the pump, the swimming pool pump. You know, yeah, I've got it down. I'm running mine really about 5 hours a day.
I hope mine will still run.
It's getting to be about time to increase that.
About time to turn it on. I guess mine will still run. I ought to go around this afternoon while y'all are here and turn it on.
You might want to sift your water. It looks pretty thick.
Does it?
I don't know. If you strived to have the blackest swimming pool in the world, you've done it.
But you know, not one of those blind people said a word about it.
I noticed they said. In fact, they remarked to me, "What a beautiful pool he is."
Not a one of them said a word about my nasty swimming pool. Didn't bother them a bit. They didn't care.
Well, you know, I thought about that. They came all the way from Boston and Tennessee, and they didn't even see mine. They didn't step out the back door.
They never went out the back door.
We
ended up in your music room playing, what was that song we played for about a week? I can't remember. Some song we got.
Moon River.
Man. We got on. I went outside, had a cigarette, came back in. You were still.
Yeah, but that was only the first verse.
I don't know how that happened. Anyway.
Tommy? A good time was had
a
by
all. A good time was had
exactly. Yeah.
Here's a guy that I think Pat will identify with here. He says, "I'm about to do some drywall work, and I'm looking for a way to lift the sheets to the ceiling. The prices for the lifts are a bit high, and I don't work fast enough to rent. Any suggestions on affordable equipment?" His name is Tony, Pat.
There's only one way to do it, Tony.
Yeah, you're going to have to bite the bullet. I mean, unless you have someone working with you, you know, I mean, it's either, and to be practical, going up over your head, you need three people. I mean, you're going to have two to hold the rock up there and one to kind of get a nail started. You know, you get two or three screws or nails in there, and then
you
got it made. Renting, you know, we had somebody, I wish I could think of his name, that bought their own sheetrock lift. It wasn't too long ago. We had it three or four.
That was David.
And he didn't seem to mention the price being so prohibitive. I rented one. I think I kept it 3 days or 4 days, maybe, and it was like $89. So, if you're any slower than that, If you're going to go up to $100-something, you ought to buy one. You know, I've had kind of success with buying tools, using them, and when I get through, sell them. And then if you don't get your full price back, just chalk that up to the rent.
So, yep. Yeah, you could buy it and resell it at the end of the project.
Resell it.
But I mean, unless you've got somebody working with you, you're not going to be able to do that by yourself unless you got a couple people.
Yeah, even the lift. Well, the lift will get them up there. If you're working by yourself, then I can see how slow it's going to be. And your lift will get them snug as a bug, you know. But I don't see how by yourself you would put that sheet of sheetrock on that lift, because it only comes down, in my recollection, chest high. I mean, it's not more, and that's a pretty hefty lift for a one guy with one piece of 1 4-by-8 piece of sheetrock.
Yeah,
so you could probably get it up on the lift, but then you know and you could, if a guy was really ingenious, you might be able to build some sort of scaffold to hold it up, and then you lay the sheetrock up there, and then you just keep stacking stuff under it until you. But you know, you're going to have to rent a lift.
Well, I thought about. I mean, there's several ways, not to prolong it. I mean, I at this time before I rented the lift, I thought about trying to make one with a 4x8. I mean, a 4x4 post, a couple, and I have a nice floor jack. But the time you did all that, my floor jack cost $150, and the 4x, I mean, so go buy a sheetrock lift. That's what they're made for.
Well, I mean, I've got some stands that will hold one up that'll go 8 feet long.
Yeah.
That ratchet stands that keep going out. If you had four of those, you could walk around, and you could almost do it with four of those. But boy,
how much are they?
If you get it tipped a little bit, you know, and that piece of sheetrock falls, you lost it, and it'll break real easy, guy.
Or hit you in the head.
Oh man,
oh yeah.
That's go rent the lift, cheap boy. Come on,
get with it. May have to have that.
Or buy it and resell it. You know.
Yeah, buy it and who'd you say bought one, Sean?
David Braziz, that guy that works at Carnegie Mellon that we had here a while back.
Yeah, he bought one.
Yeah, we were talking about it.
He just went and bought him one.
He said he had so much sheetrock to hang, he thought he'd just go ahead and buy one.
Yeah, but he's got this massive house that he's remodeling, remember?
Oh, yeah, big project.
Really big project. All right, Tommy?
Okay, my wife normally vacuums the pool, and I'm wondering if any of you have tried. And if so, what were the results? I usually take care of the automatic sweeper and the brushing of walls and bottom of the pool, but now want to give the vacuuming a shot. This is Bryce.
Well, vacuuming is better than brushing. I don't know how much better. It's all a hell of a lot of work, but if you just insisted on vacuuming the pool, it...
This guy talks like he has a pool cleaner, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
His wife.
An automatic sweeper.
Automatic pool cleaner, I think.
You can vacuum. You can feel. You put the vacuum on the end of the pole. You can feel where you are. If you can't see, you know what your pool looks like. You know that it goes down real slow. Usually they go down real. The slope is really gradual until it gets to about halfway down, and then it drops into it. Just drops off into a bowl down at the end of the pools I've had do that. I guess, is that the way yours is? That's the way all of them are.
That's the way ours is. You could get a lot of it that way.
And you can feel where you are. I mean, it's all going to end up, if you're running the pump, most of the stuff is going to end up down by the bottom drain because the bottom drain is going to suck it down there. And so you can get it out, and you vacuum a while, and you pull it out and empty your thing, and you've got, if you're getting stuff or not. But we used to have a deal, a really neat deal, that went on the end of a water hose. Shaw, have you seen these?
I've used one every spring, in fact. It
goes on the end of a water hose.
Yep.
And it has a bag on it, and you put it on the end of your water hose, and you scoot it around in your pool, and it picks up a big bag full of.
And it has little wheels on it, so you actually can feel it rolling along the bottom. And the good thing about it, you turn the water hydrant on, like, as high as it'll go, and the pressure coming out of the little hose will force
leave back up into this bag. And they make, I saw one time with a big, long bag on it that would hold tons of leaves.
Yeah, now that's kind of what ours has got. The bag's probably about 2 foot long, 3 foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would comment, too, with your auto pool cleaner, if it's working properly, really, it's been my experience that about the only place I really need to vacuum, and most time I just brush it and let the pool cleaner come back, is the steps.
Yeah.
And the bench, and there again, is blind or sighted, you can feel when you're on that bench, so just run that vacuum.
Dear.
But also, if I were going to vacuum and couldn't see at all, I would get in the pool. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it now, but, I mean, in the summertime...
I've tried that, though, brushing and vacuuming, being in the pool, though. And what's strange, you'd think standing up on the deck of the pool, that would be the way to go. But when you get down in the pool and you try to push the vacuum along, especially if the water level's up like chest high or so, it's hard as hell to push, to push the vacuum or the net. That's the problem you run into in the deep end.
You're going to know, of course... Doing it by yourself is your major project because you vacuum a while and you got to go turn everything off, shut the valves down, take the lid off the skimmer, empty the basket, put the lid back on the skimmer, put the vacuum. You got to figure out a way to get the vacuum to grab suction. If you're using the vacuum with a skimmer, you got to place it just right so where when you turn the pump on, it'll pop down on the top of the. So it's a major project by yourself.
It's a pain in the neck.
By yourself. I tried it one summer and I just told her, I can't do this by myself. I'm not going to do it.
It's just a pain.
We'll fill it up,
Bah humbug on pool maintenance.
So, but if I told you I did my. If I hooked up my vacuum with my pump running, y'all don't do that?
No, I do.
No, you can. You could.
Yeah, I do. I just take. If you get that thing full of water. And my pump's on, you put it down on that skimmer.
You can. You just slap it down on it, and it'll suck right down. Yeah. But your aim better be good.
Yeah, you better.
If you get it off to the side, you're going to have to go cut it off, and, you want to get it right over the skimmer and boop.
Actually, the way I do it is I put one end in the pool to take the other end of the hose, and I take it to the outlet, to the water outlet of the pool, stick it in down there with my hand, and let the water fill the hose.
Yeah.
And then keep it down in the water. And just carry it around and put it over the pump.
Yeah. Now, you could slap it on there when the pump's running. I guess you could do that. I never did, but you could.
It just suck up some air.
But you're right. Buy humbug on pool maintenance.
It's a deal.
We're going to start this weekend going to buy that big $90 drum of chlorine, the first of, I'm sure, several.
I need to buy some shock myself. I'm out.
Anybody got it on sale?
Not that I know of.
Do you find the Walmart chemicals work as well as Kenco's, as well as the pool stores, or not?
I've been buying ours now for the last couple of years at Sam's and places like that.
Lowe's,
fine.
Yeah.
Or
it'd
Lowe's,
be a lot cheaper,
yeah.
wouldn't it, than the pool oh. store?
Well, I don't know. Kimco always has that 100-pound bucket of shock for $100. Ever, probably about the end of March.
Yeah.
Now, if you buy that deal, I don't know if you'll beat that.
Bad. That's not bad because Lowe's 90-pound thing is $97.
You know, yeah. that 100-pound bucket of shock for 100 pounds for $100 was the same when I bought that house in 1978.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that has not gone up in 28 years?
It probably will this year.
It was $100
this summer.
It was $100
Probably because of the hurricane.
Yeah, that's right.
There'll be a shortage of chlorine in the Southwest, that kind of thing. Anyway, the music indicates, ladies and gents, that Dan Rossi is our guest today.
Yeah.
We've had on many times before from Carnegie Mellon University. Very interesting guy. Has his life together, and you'll enjoy him back in just a moment with more of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on.
Ever, Blind Handyman t-shirts and caps are available. Now through midnight February 11th, Blind My Smart has a special introductory offer. Get an 8-color Blind Handyman t-shirt for only $20, or a Handyman adjustable cap for only $15, or get them both for just $30. This offer positively ends midnight February 11th. Order online at blindmysmart.com or by phone at 713-876-6971. All major credit cards plus PayPal and personal checks accepted. Don't miss this special introductory offer. A full-color Blind Handyman t-shirt plus adjustable cap for only $30. Online at blindmysmart.com or by phone at 713-876-6971. You can be a blind handyman even if you're a girl.
Oh, I like that.
Do you know about the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List. And it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
You are listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, sir, it's always a pleasure to introduce this gentleman who's been a mainstay on our list for, many, many months and always has comments to make about almost everything. I love to see his posts. Dan Rossi, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Phil. How about yourself?
Good to have you with us. Nice to visit with you. Dan is fixing to get married.
Yes. Labor Day weekend.
Oh, you've decided. You set a time at Labor Day weekend. Then,
yes,
huh?
It is.
Uh-huh. And you're just all kind of interesting things happened to you. You're going to Italy on your honeymoon? Did you say?
Yeah, we're going to do 3 weeks in Italy. Last part of September, first part of October.
Is that right? And your mother won some sort of the... Tell us about this little deal. That
my mother was entered in, without her knowledge originally, was entered in a Miss Senior Florida pageant. And she went through it, and she won. And so now in November, She'll be off to Las Vegas for the national Miss Senior USA competition.
It's pretty amazing. I think I won that one year. Not real sure. But anyway, that's just, and she didn't know they had entered her name.
No, she didn't know. And then the people she worked with offered to, they bought the gown and help pay for an arranger to do the music for her song and the background music, and she can still sing after all these years as well.
And what did she sang a pop tune?
It's an old tune called "Live Till I Die," it's a pretty punchy song, and she really had the lungs to keep it going.
That's neat.
That is just really neat. Is she happy about it? She's got to be thrilled.
She's thrilled. I mean, I think she's a little nervous about how much time it will take. I mean, my mom, both my parents still work. They're both in their mid late 60s, and they both still work mostly full time jobs. So. Uh-huh. It's gonna take a lot of time, and I think that's the only thing that's concerning them both right now.
Well, I'm proud for all this happening to you, but you're not gonna come to Houston, which disappoints us. Because we would love to have you, but there'll be another.
I'd love to be there. It's just bad timing all around.
There'll be another year.
I can't imagine a guy wanting to go to Italy when he could come to Houston.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Then it may be time for a divorce. And we know a lot of lawyers.
Dan is going to have a one and only good marriage. It's because you people, aren't you fixing to be 40? Didn't we decide that?
No, actually, I turned 39 yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
Yep.
Boop seemed to think you were 40. She does. She gets confused.
She does.
Poor girl. She's a little drifty. But, we love her to death. But you're 39 yesterday, so you're old enough to know what you want, it's going to work out, and I'm just happy as I can be for you. Let me just ask you this. Did we do a show on the way you found your lady?
I don't know if we did a show. I know pretty sure we mentioned it. I used eHarmony.com, and it worked pretty well for us. The thing is, everybody always tells you when you meet the right person, you'll know, and you always think that's crap. Because I'd met a number of women, and I dated for years, several years, but when I met Teresa, it wasn't too long before I realized, hey, I think this is the right person.
Yeah. She seemed to fit into, from what you post on the list, just seemed to fit in with you so well. I mean, and that was obvious to all of us who read, which y'all been working on this. You bought a lot of things happened to you this year. You bought a house.
Yep.
And you're planning, this is your first marriage.
Yes, yes
and,
it is.
So it's a year of change with Dan. We'll write that down in the annals.
That's right.
The Closet Project. Start us from the beginning, update us, and tell us all the great Closet Project.
The Great Closet Project. So the house I purchased is pretty small. It's only about 950 square feet total on the two floors. Not a lot of storage space, although there is a full basement, but I have other plans for that. There's a very large closet in the master bedroom. It's about 6.5 feet wide and 3 feet deep. However, there was just a regular 28-inch regular swinging door all the way at one end of the long side, so that when you open the door, which actually wouldn't even open all the way because the radiator was in the way, you could see about 28 inches of the hanging bar, and then the rest of the closet disappeared off to the right somewhere.
Yeah.
And so it became, it's very difficult to get to anything that you pushed off to the right side. It just kind of disappears into the void there.
That's right.
And I really wanted to be able to use more of that space because storage is at a premium. So Teresa and I talked about it, and because we both work for universities, we had the week off between Christmas and New Year's. And so we decided to tear down that wall of the closet and open up the closet all the way end to end and put in sliding closet doors. And so we We both were a little nervous about it. Neither of us had ever taken on a project of that magnitude. And so, but once you put the hammer through the wall the first time, you're kind of committed.
Committed. There's no turning back then, guys. I love it.
So we tore down the wall, and that was a lot of hard work, but it was a lot of fun, and absolute disaster. You know, we hung up plastic floor to ceiling to try and contain the plaster dust.
Yeah.
It's an old house. It's about 80 years old or a little more than that. And so we weren't sure what to expect when we started pounding into the wall. And it turns out to be, it wasn't plaster on lath, which is what I was expecting. It was this plasterboard, but it was much denser and heavier than sheetrock, that modern drywall. And we tried cutting it out with a recip saw, and we must have gone through about six blades because it was.
Was it? Don't mean to interrupt.
No.
Was it on wire? You know, like a mesh.
It wasn't. It wasn't. But what it was these bands about a foot wide, bottom to top, basically, and then you know, spanning about 4 feet.
Made out of
some kind of plaster or some type of rock, and it was really hard and very heavy.
Okay.
A lot heavier than drywall, and but man, it would just we would make, you know, a cut 6 feet long going from cutting down through the wall to try to take out bigger sections of it, and literally after 6 feet the saw blade was flat, no teeth left on it at all.
Whoa.
Really?
And, but you got a chance to buy a reciprocating saw, which you would, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, this project actually got me lots of great tools.
Yeah.
One of the best tools I think I found was one of these great little pry bars. And, you know, it's got kind of like a flat notched end on one side and then a hooked notched end on the other side.
Yeah.
And you could take down the better part of a house with one of those.
You can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you bought it, but I think they also call this a sawzall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which is, everybody needs one.
Yeah, yeah, they're a great tool for destruction.
Oh, man. Something to tear up thing to have.
All right, so, but made of bands of some sort of
some type of plaster or you know, I don't know, whatever sheetrock is.
If you got it wet, would it disintegrate, or did you try that?
I didn't try that. That might have been a good idea.
Were there regular studs in the wall?
Yeah, they were 2x4, real 2x4.
I bet
studs.
They were real.
Yeah. And they were heavy. I don't know what kind of wood they were, but man, they weighed a ton too.
So this would belie the construction of the entire house, is
yeah,
like this.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, well constructed.
Yeah, definitely. So we managed to tear down all that wall, and then we framed out the big, now 6 foot wide opening with some 2x4s, and then nailed up some 1x4s to make the trim. And because the trim in, around all the doors and windows around the rest of the house, it's 80 years old, and I was trying to match it up, and it was a little difficult because the side rails of the trim, they were about pretty close to a 1x4.
Okay.
But the head rails above the door and above the window sills, above the windows, were thicker than the side rails, and they also weren't flush to the edges. They were like extended out past the edges. So
and kind of curved up a little bit.
Yeah. And
okay.
So I kind of spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to.
In the corners, did it have that little curlicue design in where they came together or not?
No, it didn't. It didn't have that. But I'll tell you what, it was at the bottoms where the kick cord along the bottom came into the side rail. There was like a rectangular block that was taller than the bottom rail and thicker than either the side rail or the bottom rail.
Yeah, I know. I've seen those. I've seen that.
So getting all this stuff to match up was took a lot of time and effort. You know, I had to shim out the top, the head rail by, you know, a quarter of an inch to make it stick out further than the side rails. And there was an awful lot of shimming going on to get everything square. I mean, you either get square or you get plumb. You don't get both. In these old houses, because nothing is
But you know, Lowe's and not necessarily Lowe's, but Home Depot and the rest of them all have an amazing amount of different kinds of trim, and you didn't see any there that matched. I guess you went and looked.
Yeah, we went and looked, and we didn't. We just couldn't find anything that was the same size and shape, and so we even because the trim in the house had rounded corners, but not like a full quarter round or anything. So I ended up planing off the sharp corners and then sanding them down. And I think overall, we did a pretty good match, and it all came out pretty well.
And your measurements had to be fairly exact because you were going to hang. I guess these doors that you put are on a hanging track.
Exactly.
Like a shower door hangs.
Right. It's a big long rail and. And I measured everything to the nth degree, and even after we cut it, I was only off by about a quarter inch. And supposedly the doors, you know, they told you to measure out this much, and they said that gives you a 3/4 inch leeway. And I thought, all right, I'm off by a quarter, so I still got a half an inch of leeway.
Yeah.
Yeah, no way, man. The doors were not getting in there. So I ended up having to cut about a half inch off the bottom of the doors. But really? Yeah, but you don't notice it.
Are they wooden? They're wooden doors?
Yeah.
Nobody will ever notice it.
No. And so they actually hang pretty nicely now.
The worst place in the world, Dan, to get off is on a door opening. I mean, not even a window. You can hide a window.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this on my famous garage project. I was off on my 16-foot-wide overhead door opening. I was not square in one corner.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of tilted back, but luckily their little rubberized trim, and you know that they put a little facing on after they hang the door,
right,
covered that. But you know, that's the worst place. I mean, of all of the places to make a mistake,
yeah,
that's the place.
Luckily, everything else came out nice, so that with the leeway that the doors give you, you put the hardware, you know, the rollers on the top edge of the door, and you can kind of tilt those a little. And after playing around with that for a while, the doors actually square up to the jams really nicely. So I was pretty happy with that part.
And she painted, or she, what did she do?
Yeah, she painted the doors and trim, but so all that was great. But that took us the better part of a week because we were constantly running out to the hardware store to pick up tools and stuff, supplies that we just didn't have. But then we had a nice closet that was 6 feet, 6.5 feet wide and 3 feet deep and nothing in it.
And usable.
Yeah, well, it wasn't usable at that point. That was the problem.
But also, did you do a sliding door or bifolds?
It's a double, you know, sliding door.
Okay.
A lot of people recommended bifolds and a lot of people recommended not bifolds.
Well, bifolds are hard to hang too. I mean, they're just as wacky as, you know, because you don't have any support at the bottom.
Right.
Just that one hook, and so you pull on it over a year. I mean, we've been in our house 2 years, and I've already had to go and kind of readjust and redo some bifold doors.
Right,
you know?
Right. So
these are just two sliding doors. It slides one. It's open on one end or the other.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Well, that's simple enough. So you're going to put a big long rod in there.
So that was the next part of the project. That once we went back to work, I had a lot less time to work on the closet. The clothes stayed hanging on a rail on two chairs for a while,
uh-huh.
and then I was trying to come up with a design to really maximize the use of that space, because I could have just hung one rail all the way across
and
hanging rod, but the closet is really deeper than that, and so it seemed like it would be a lot of wasted space to do that. And Teresa said she would like some shelves because she folds her sweaters and folds some of her jeans
and put shoes on. Yeah.
Yeah, so I came up with a design that basically I built a large shelf unit that's about 2 feet wide and a hair over 2 feet deep. And on one side of it, it goes to the floor. And on the other side of it, it's kind of open underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And so one hanging rod goes from the right side of the closet to the left side of, the hanging unit, or the shelf unit. So it actually,
okay,
part of the bar is under the shelves.
All right.
And it hangs low to the floor. It's about 40 inches.
Which would be great for hanging pants and things.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And then the shelf unit has three shelves, two of which are floating. So I kind of drilled a bunch of holes in the sides and stuck some pegs in, and so you can move the shelves around up, mm-hmm, and down, mm-hmm, to adjust the height of them. And then on the all the way to the left side, there's just about an 18-inch wide section between the wall and the shelf unit, and that has a high rod in it so that you can hang longer clothing, dresses, and you know, my suit,
yeah,
hangs in there. And then there's also a short rod that goes from the right side of the closet to the right side of the shelf unit, and it hangs directly above the other rod. So it's another, it's about 40 inches or so. Actually, it's about 42 inches above the other rod. So you can hang more clothes there. Behind all the rods, the two rods, are narrow shelves about 11 inches wide. And everybody says, well, you know, they're behind all the clothes. What use is that? It's like, well, everybody has stuff that migrates into closets that you never see again. And so now we have shelves to put it on.
But you've got, yeah, to have some place to put those kinds of things.
Exactly.
You know, the shoes you wear in the summer, you don't wear in the winter, the vice versa. Or,
exactly.
You know, your box with the family money.
Right.
You want that.
Right.
Stuck back there in the back of the closet. Your hat.
Yeah, yeah,
you,
exactly.
You know, that you'll never wear again.
So in the end, it came together pretty well. I was really getting kind of nervous about putting it all together. I'm kind of new to all the handyman stuff, and I was not sure exactly how to do everything. I used medium density fiberboard for all the shelves and everything, and man, that stuff weighs a ton.
Yeah, it's heavy.
It is heavy.
And you need to brace it right, because it'll sag if you don't.
Exactly. I was concerned about that, and mounting it to the wall, bracing it to the back wall, was a big concern, because a neighbor of mine told me it's a townhouse, and that wall is the separating wall between...
That's the common wall.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And it's apparently there's a brick wall, and then there's clay tile over the brick wall, and then there's,
whoa,
a layer of plaster on top of the clay tile.
Man.
And they told me that the clay tile was going to be brutal to get through. And my neighbor actually said, you know, buy some bits, because you'll get two or three holes per bit. And he said, buy everything you can get, by the Tapcon concrete bolts, toggle bolts, get yourself some construction adhesive, because he said you might hit a void in the tile, and you might hit, you know, solid tile. And I was really dragging my feet on that part of the project.
On bolting the shelf unit to the back wall.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but it turns out I got lucky, I guess. I borrowed a hammer drill from my neighbor, and, you know, got everything kind of in position, and drilled through the wood braces where I was going to hang the shelves, and then just leaned hard into it, and it punched through the clay tile pretty easily, and I hit a void in every case. So I was able to, after slathering up the shelf rails with construction adhesive, I just hammered some toggle bolts through and tightened them down.
Just like the same thing as you used on sheetrock.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and tightened them up, and bingo.
Yeah.
Because all you're really doing is balancing this thing anyway.
Pretty much.
Because it's sitting on the floor.
Exactly.
And you just don't want it to fall forward, or you just don't want it to move.
Right.
So this is a townhouse, and it's a townhouse that was built 80 years ago.
Yeah, it was built in the 1920s, and actually it's really unusual for a number of reasons. For one, there's about 20 townhouses. There are 20 townhouses built around this common courtyard,
uh-huh,
but there's no townhouse community or townhouse association. Each house owns a chunk of the courtyard.
Okay.
And you own the property, so I can do anything I want to my house, inside or outside, and nobody can say, yes, you can do that, or no, you can't.
And that's good. A good thing.
Yeah.
Or bad.
Yeah, either way.
But the 1920s, you don't think of people building townhouses.
That's true.
Well, there were row houses, yeah, I guess, in some sense. There are a lot of them in Pittsburgh, and they're, a lot of them are actually built really well, and they're very quiet because there was a lot of shift work going on in the coal mines and the steel mills, and so you needed it to be quiet because somebody might be home and somebody might be working. So they're actually pretty quiet places.
So, and you think these were built for the workers that worked in the steel mills then to live in, or what?
Yeah, I believe so. That's my understanding of it. And
so, are you a Pittsburgh? Or Philadelphia?
I'm in Pittsburgh.
Okay, And what you're calling the row houses? I mean, they're quite famous.
And there's definitely lots of coal around here. As I was digging up my yard, it's mostly coal in the ground.
There's a
big coal seam that runs through here. The other interesting part about this townhouse community is it's inaccessible by road. There's no driveways. You have to walk up four flights of stairs to get to the courtyard where all the houses are built around.
Really?
Yeah, there's no driveways. Anything you buy, you're lugging up those stairs.
Yeah.
But it's the nice thing about that is it's extremely private. Once you get up to the courtyard, there's this beautiful courtyard with a little fountain and lots of grassy areas and trees, and there's no throughway. There's no, you're well back off the road, so there's no traffic noise.
Yeah, no traffic noise.
Nobody's up there except for people who live there.
Yeah, so that'd be cool.
So, Dan, are all these houses that join on the courtyard, are they attached to each other? You said yours was, so is it like a square in a sense or a rectangle?
There are five blocks of four houses each.
Okay.
So there's, when you come up to the courtyard, you're on the short end of the rectangular courtyard.
I got you.
And to the left side and to the right side, there are two blocks of four houses each, and then straight ahead of you, there's a block of four houses.
Yeah.
And so I have an end unit, which is nice because I have a lot of windows on one side, and I have a little side yard.
So
it's pretty nice.
A place to set your grill or
and
if you wanted.
Right now there's a ground level deck, but one of my next big projects will be to build an elevated deck that's level with the
floor
of the house.
When you come out the back door, you don't go down steps.
Right now you do, and I'd like to change that.
But your basement that you talked about is not actually submerged.
It's only like at the front of the house, because the ground is sloped. At the front of the house, the basement is probably, the lower 5 feet of it is submerged. And at the back of the house, only maybe about 2 feet is submerged.
Yeah, so the windows are kind of just like level with the ground.
The windows are, at the front of the house, it's a big window, and it's maybe 18 inches off the ground nearer the front. It's a little set back. So the basement gets a lot of light.
Remember the basement at TSB?
Was like that.
Then when you went in, you walked down two flights of stairs, and then you were in the basement, and the windows that you had been knee-high to outside... were 9 feet over.
Yeah, that's right. They were up over your head inside.
Yeah, if you were down in the gym.
Yeah.
If you were down
in either
gym, it went on down, but the basement, like where the tuning department was, those windows were just like, ground. I mean, they were just about waist level, and they were right just there. Which is the way yours are.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you got plenty of room downstairs for a wool shop.
Oh, yeah.
Make this shop.
I have a rudimentary shop at the moment, but I've got to start working on building out a real shop for myself.
How far are we away from, you're living in this house now, so there isn't that much more to do, is there?
The house was perfectly livable when I moved in. I mean, there was nothing to be done. And so everything I'm doing or want to do is just for my own benefit.
I can remember before my wife and I got married how much fun it was. We built that studio, and now it's, don't come help me, baby. You probably won't slow me down too much. That kind of stuff. But, lots of luck, and it'll all work out.
Right.
Listen, good luck, Daniel. Thank you, sir. You're just always a pleasure to talk to.
Oh, thank you very much.
And sorry you can't make Houston, but there'll be other years, and tell Teresa we all said hello.
Will do.
Thank you, Daniel.
Have a good one.
Back
Have
with more
one,
Blind
Dan.
Handyman in just a second. Hang on.
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is BlindMySmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com. Do you know about the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List. And it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
With Don?
I was going to do Don Patterson. Trust me, I was. But I
slipped up on the button, didn't you?
I didn't have him in my Winamp program here, and I didn't want to go look at
Patterson. It wasn't in the queue.
Boy, that'll teach me to miss too many shows. I mean,
they're taking you out of Winamp.
I guess Dave Farron probably just deleted me. Right?
Just deleted you out of the system.
Believe me, I looked for you. I just couldn't find you.
I'd say, well, Phil has been guilty of that, looking for me and couldn't find
me. No, certainly not.
Anyway, so who are we going back to? How about it, Don? Tell us.
I don't have anything today. Nothing to talk about today, in fact.
Let's see. You want us to beg you to tell us about
I said, starting off at the show, you know, four-car garage and still building a wheel. Wonders never cease.
That's right.
The building just keeps going on, and I'll probably go to my grave with some unfinished symphony. But we started the swimming pool pavilion here, and I don't know, four months ago, I poured the concrete slab for that. It's going to be 20 by 40 of a building behind the swimming pool, basically designed for setting under tables, but also a bathroom and shower. And that will
keep everybody from trotting through the house.
The wet bathing suits out of the house. Yeah. That's just... On the other end, it's going to have the bathroom's like 10 by 10. In the back, say, one rear corner of the 20 by 40 slab. Mm-hmm. On the other end is a 10 by 10, which will be the storeroom and, like, changing room. Mm-hmm. Store the swimming pool, the net, and the vacuum, and the this and that.
Yeah.
Chemicals, and then we could have a bench and maybe some lockers you can put your stuff in, you know, your bracelet. You know,
yeah, or hangers.
This and that. And so that's, and other than that, it's going to be a covered roof, a shingled roof. We have 9 foot high, the beam, and then up to, it's like a 5-12 pitch roof. So in the center, it'd be 15 or so feet. It will
And the gable running, the length of the pool running?
The length of the 40 feet, and it will not be sealed. So you'll be looking up at nice, clean rafters. It'll be open air, picnic tables, you know, maybe a jukebox and an ice box and this sort of thing.
Wet bar.
And so... while I was doing this, I just had on my mind, I also contracted with a man, and we're going to build a 20 by 40 dog pen. I call this my rainy day dog pen. As you know, if you're a listener, a regular listener, I now have 4 puppy dogs. And good dogs, one and all. Love them all. Love them.
Dog hell.
Doggy. It's the joys of doggy ownership.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I decided what happens is, you know, I love my dear sweet wife, the warden, and she gets up every morning and goes off to work diligently, and sometimes she takes a dog and sometimes she doesn't. So either way, I wind up with 3-4 dogs to tend to.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I also have a life. I try to work it in. I like my private time. I like to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, make a pot of coffee, go play with my keyboard or accordion or just read or whatever. And sometimes you can't do it with 4 puppy dogs. Well,
yeah.
Of course, if you had bad weather like we do sometimes, we went through a period here of rain here, what, a couple, 3 weeks ago?
Where weeks of rain.
Rained. You know, we were crying for it, and then it happened. Well, if you let these old cross lab crosses and cross poodle dogs like I have out, their main joy in life is get muddy. Just get as muddy as you can, and then Mr. Don will let you back in the house, and you can shake and fling it against the walls. And
yeah.
So I, for self-protection, I am building a 20 by 40 dog pen with a concrete slab. It's going to have about 4 10 by 10 pens that you can put the dogs in. They can stay in comfort, and there will be water, automatic water fillers. And they will have their food, but the only thing is they can't get wet. And I will take them on their leash to their little pen, and in the evening I will go fetch them and bring them back into the nice, clean house.
That's right.
And so that's what I'm about. I'm going to do
20 by 40?
Yes, I had it.
Good Lord.
Nice roof over their head.
And I already have the framework up. I had a guy, and we used 4 by 4, 14 gauge, what down here we call red iron. And this guy is a welder. And
is it angle iron?
No, it's 4x4. Square
post. It's 4x4 square post.
Square post.
Really?
Tubing, they call it.
No kidding.
And so even the top beams, and so we space with 4 posts down one side, and if you start, we set it in about 4 inches so the concrete slab can go around the post, but so roughly each post going down one 40-foot side is like 13 feet apart, 13, I think in the middle it's 12-8. Anyway, and then we have 4 cross pieces going from side to side to tie the top together.
Okay.
And then I will use the 4x5x12 pitched wooden trusses that I've talked about before from the same that I'm going to use on the swimming pool pavilion. And we welded brackets on 24-inch centers that these trusses will screw to. And then if I had the trusses the way I designed this, if I had all of my trusses and a way to get them on the top, I could install them in one day, as opposed to laying joist and then doing rafters and a ridge pole by myself. And that's why I decided to go to trusses. And cheaper, I don't even see that, roughly $58 per truss. I don't even see how I could buy the lumber and the metal brackets for that. But that's the current project. Right now I have the framework up for the dog kennel, and the two storerooms are on the pavilion.
I don't mean to be dumb. I was just born that way. I'm not sure I know exactly what a truss looks like.
Okay. If you were going to build a roof, you would go someplace and set up two posts or two, what I used is 3 2x4s, and the middle one is shorter than the two outside ones by the height of whatever board you're going to use for your ridge row. In my garage's case, I used a 2x8 for the ridge. The slot, then that ridge pole sits down in that slot, and you have these two support on each end, risers.
That hold up the ridge pole.
So then you use your joists, you know, they go flat across your spans.
Across the width of the building.
Yeah, whatever.
Then you do rafters.
And then a rafter goes up.
goes right from the joist to the ridgepole.
What a truss is, it's the rafter and joist made together.
I got you.
With no, you don't use a ridge pole, so they say. And then in this truss, say if you went up on the rafter about, say, let's just say 2 feet, you would have an angle going down maybe at a 45 down to the joist.
Down to the joist.
And it's all built, like when you build rafters and joists by yourself, the rafter is offset. It's nailed to the joist on one side.
Yeah.
A truss is built all in the same
plane. But now, all right, at the top, do you tie all these together with something?
I'm going to ask the guy. He says no. He says your decking holds
we'll do it.
But obviously, I want it to be level, and so I thought about using a lath.
But the truss is the whole thing. It is the rafters going each way, coming to a peak at the top, and the cross piece at the bottom, and then some angles coming down from the what we call the rafters to the joists.
Right.
It's the whole thing, all in one deal.
In the same plane. They're not offset. In other words, the rafter's not on
one
side. Yeah.
How do they make those?
Well,
are they made of iron? Are they made
They're 2x4s. And I told him, I said, that scares me. I said, what if I wanted 2x6s? And he said, for what you're going to do, that's overkill. I mean, they have figured all of the engineering.
They say the strongest thing in the world is an arch.
Well, these are similar triangles. And that's the way they used to build bridges, you know, with.
And do so, I hear. I do, don't I?
Yeah, I guess it's time to get off.
I guess
time
it is.
Get out.
Well, we dispensed a little useful information maybe today.
Yeah. I doubt it.
I doubt it.
No, let's see. I know we did because we didn't answer anyone's email. So we probably did.
We actually may have answered an email or two. Thank you, Don Shaw and Don Pat.
Yeah.
Appreciate y'all.
Yeah.
Come back and see us. And we'll try to do it next week. Tom Houston, as usual, your usual marvelous.
Thank you, sir. Wonderful job. Thank you.
I'll have to think a little bit about this. Thank you for being with us. I'm Phil Parsons, and the blind man, he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.